Caller number 10, who dials 800-636-1067 right now, congrats, you're going to win two tickets to see the Capitals take on the Penguins November 8th at Capital One Arena. For tickets to the game and the complete Capitals schedule, go to thefandc.com/events. We are Grant and Danny. We are the flagship home of the Caps and the Nats, and more football talk than anyone about a team with a bright future. It's time for you to think about yours. The exclusive sponsor of our show will help. They are the law firm, Condori and Marad. They will update your last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family. Kind of paperwork you got to get done if you are a grown-up with kids, man. Got to happen. Not fun, but you got to do it. Just get it out of the way. Schedule a free consultation. They'll make it easy, seamless. They got estate planning attorneys to help you out. Go to kmlawyers.com. You'll get a discount if you mention us. Good discount, too. kmlawyers.com is where you got to go. It is time for your Beltway Blitz. We're covering the Commanders, the Capitals, and the Wizards all in one segment on this Halloween Thursday. Why don't we get things started on the gridiron? Our buddy Michael Phillips, you hear him on 910 The Fan in Richmond. Of course, the Richmonder as well. Michael, I'm not sure we've talked to you since the Hail Mary, but what have you made of the last several days, the reaction, and just what that did for this fan base in town?
I mean, it's what we talked about in the Cincinnati game of winning on Monday Night Football, national TV, the kid outduels Joe Burrow, throws it right on the money to Terry McLaurin at the end, right? And everybody saw that because it was Monday Night Football, national TV. People are like, I'll dip my toe back into this. All right, that was fun. And then that's just that on steroids. Like, the whole country was watching. All the 425 games were over. Tony Romo, Jim Nance are there yelling, screaming them the whole works. And it's an amazing play. It's a fun football play. And then you add in Tyreek Stevenson waving at the fans. It's the kind of play that gets your team talked about for a team that needs to be talked about.
Miguel, this weekend, they haven't fared terribly well against the Giants. They won this earlier matchup by a field goal, but coming in, they'd lost at least four straight, sort of going back over. It'd been since 2021 that they swept that matchup. For whatever reason, they play rock fights against the Giants. What are you expecting this weekend?
Yeah, I would expect more of the same. I mean, this is a Giants team with its back to the wall as well, and Daniel Jones is playing for his NFL future. If Daniel Jones is playing, you know, there's always that, you know, will Daniel Jones keep playing in New York? You're waiting for the shoe to drop on that one. And this is a desperate team, and this is a team with some defensive talent, and certainly you saw last week, I don't think Jaden's 100%. I don't think he will be this week either. I think it's a good enough team and roster right now to win, but I do have concerns on the offensive line. You think about Coleman and Lucas potentially being out. Those are major concerns, right? So I don't think this is going to be a win against the Browns or Panthers or one of these 40-point cakewalks. They're going to have to fight for it. But you look back at that last game and you see the field goals, the drives. They got a lot of yardage. Certainly the building blocks of success were there.
Michael Phillips, the Richmonder and Odyssey in Richmond, with us on our Grant and Danny's Beltway Blitz here. How much better is the defense right now?
It's so much better along the line, right? And I don't need to get into the hot take discussion like, oh, John Allen's gone, they got better. Like, I think it's been a natural trajectory of improvement over the course of the year. I think guys in the secondary have settled in. I love Frankie Louvu. Man, that guy's playing really good football. I think he's the best player on the defense right now. I think Daron Payne's pretty close, though. I think he's anchoring that front group. And they play good team football. Nobody's going to confuse them for a bunch of Pro Bowlers or a bunch of stud athletes. But they're playing well together. And you know, I mentioned after 20 years of being on the other end of discussions about momentum, these guys have been talking about needing to communicate better for 20 years. It seems like maybe these guys actually like each other and don't mind playing on a football field with each other.
Why isn't this really good offense better in the red zone?
It's hard to score in the red zone right now in football. You look at what teams are doing, Danny. It's that too high safety, right? Like, we'll give you short stuff, we'll let you get down the field, and then we're going to put the clamps on you when we get to the red zone. Patrick Mahomes is having this problem, and Patrick Mahomes is pretty good at football, so I don't sweat too much. Jaden Daniels is having this problem as well. Defenses right now are saying, we'll give you 5 yards at a time. We'll count on you to make a holding penalty or a false start, kill your own drive. A lot of teams do that. Doesn't seem to affect these guys. These guys get in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9 pretty regularly and just find a way to convert it all the time. So that's kind of its own astounding thing. But then you get in the red zone,
that space isn't there anymore. The way you want to operate your offense isn't going to work anymore.
All right, Michael, the phone is ringing. I want you to answer it. Ring, ring.
Hello, Grant.
No, actually, this is Adam Peters. Who's Grant? How are you? This is the GM of the football team.
Adam, great to hear from you. I heard you guys taking care of business. I'm actually, and this is true, I just checked my P.O. box because I'm a businessman. So a businessman to businessman, I'm going to enjoy this conversation here.
Well, I appreciate you enjoying it. What should we do at the deadline? I'm just looking for a little feedback from you before I make any decisions.
I think you should stand put. I don't think you should make a move, push any chips in. If there's a cheap play to be made to make the football team a little bit better, do it. But this is a team that where you see what Jaden is right now, and Jaden's way ahead of schedule. When you have a rookie quarterback, year two and year three are the important years, right? He's not a rookie anymore. You can push some chips in because you don't have that quarterback salary dragging you down. Also, this offseason, your phone's going to be ringing off the hook. You're not going to need to call me asking for advice. Guys are going to call you and say, I want to sign a deal and play in Washington. I want to work with number five. He looks fun. I want to play for DQ. He seems to have it going there in Washington. I think as tempting as it is to make a move, you got to stand put right now.
Michael, thank you, sir. Happy Halloween. Have a great weekend.
Take care, Danny and Adam.
Just so you know, Michael, that was not really Adam Peters. That was actually
me. Taken. Unbelievable.
It was Grant all
tricked.
There, sit at Capital Center, please. Our pal Sammy Silver talking about the Washington Capitals in action tonight. What do we need to know about tonight's game, Sammy?
The Caps are surging right now. That's the biggest thing to know. They've got to keep it simple. They got to stick to their game plan, keep the offense coming. Offense has been really easy to come by this season, which wasn't the case last year against a team like Montreal, who maybe isn't coming out of the gates exactly how they want to, but still has a lot of weapons. Nick Suzuki and, you know, really good coach there, Marty St. Louis. So a lot to watch out for when you're looking at a team like Montreal.
I am old enough to remember watching a young Martin St. Louis play hockey. 4-5-1, Montreal. Capital, 6-2 points. You know, 12 points out of a possible 16 at this point. Great start. I thought that Rangers game was as fun as an environment as I've been at in the regular season in years. The first period was as good as 20 minutes in terms of the three goals, a fight at center ice. Ovi scored twice, had a monster hit on the boards. Like, what else could you possibly want? That was as good as it gets. I saw Carb say something to the effect of he loved that the game was on national TV because it was just good for the sport. But, man, oh, man, was that good hockey.
Yeah, that was a great game. That was honestly, I mean, probably one of the best games I've been to in a long time. It, like you said, it had a little bit of everything. But really what it was just a game that really solidified and symbolized how different this Capitals team is and how good they are this year. You know, you saw, you know, not just Ovechkin doing well, but Alexei Protas. That was a huge game for him. He was all over the place. Connor McMichael keeping up his hot start to the season. You have Stromer, you know, chipping in assists. And, you know, you had the blue line stepping up when a guy like Chikrin's out with injury. So really good game all around and really what you want to see from this team.
Sam, you mentioned Ovechkin. What have you seen from him thus far this year, just in terms of how he's moving, how he's playing, et cetera, as he chases down that impossible record, which doesn't seem so impossible anymore?
Yeah, I see a guy who's 39 and having a great time. He's you know, living his best life right now. He's moving really well. He's feeling good. You know, you can see it from the way he's shooting the puck, the way he's moving his feet. You know, he just has a jump in his step, and he's just really enjoying the new roster and, you know, welcoming everybody. And, you know, just the energy from him right now is contagious. And, you know, that's exactly what Washington needs from their captain, you know, especially with a hot start like this one.
There are some shakeups needed based on injuries, particularly on the blue line now where Alexiev gets into the mix. No Chikrin, still no Matt Roy. Can you give us some updates on some of the injuries on the blue line?
Yeah, we don't – it's tough. So both were skating in a non-contact jersey, which isn't the best sign, but it's still good to obviously see both out there, especially Chikrin after, you know, he left so early last game and we don't really know what happened. All we know is that's upper body for Chikrin. Lower body still for Matt Roy, but he's getting closer and closer. As for where they are going into the weekend, we still don't really know, but it's a go from there kind of situation. And regardless, great opportunity for Alexiev. No call-ups right now, so that's a encouraging sign, but a lot of it's just wait and see.
Sammy, thank you as always. Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, guys. You too.
You got it. Darius, hit that wizard sounder, please. Welcome on, Varun Shankar covers the Washington Wizards for the Washington Post. That's why he's going to talk about the Wizards here on the Beltway Blitz. A couple straight wins. I could get used to this, Varun. Pretty simple, right?
Hey, it's 2-2 record. They're 500, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, playing good basketball. To me, it's not about wins and losses, and I think they've done a good job of sort of keeping fans' expectations in line in that regard, not, you know, trying to sell you something that isn't there, but watching the kids play well against a, you know, a not a particularly strong opponent, pretty encouraging stuff.
It absolutely has to be. And, you know, it starts with Bilal Coulibaly, who's taken a bigger step than most expected so far in his second season. He looks like a real two-way impact player. You saw what he did offensively with 27 points, resetting a career high he set just 4 to 5 days ago. And on the defensive end, whenever he was on Trae Young, Young looked much less effective than he did in a otherwise star-studded night.
How good could Coulibaly, who went 27-9 last night, end up being? What kind of upside are we talking about?
It's tough to say. You know, I've heard people throw out Paul George comps, and that's a lofty comparison, but he's got the athletic tools. He's like 6'10". He's can jump out of the gym. He's got an improving jump shot and ability to drive. And one thing that I think is underrated and is evident the second you start talking to him, this is someone who's got a really interesting mix of humility and a real drive to improve, but he's also really developed this confidence over the last year, and that's something that the Wizards brass and everyone around the team has really emphasized. So keep shooting higher.
Varun, I really like Alex Saar. I similar question to Grant's about Coulibaly. I'm not sure exactly what he is. I just know that I'll take my chances with a 7-footer that moves like that. You know, there are a couple of those moments here or there where you watch him come from, you know, seemingly out of the play to block a shot or get a rebound or handle the ball in the open court, and that assist he had last night to Coulibaly in transition. I just go, I don't know what he's going to be, but damn, it's fun to watch right now, and it's fun to dream. What is he?
I agree. It's, you know, they've done a really good job throughout the preseason, especially Coach Brian Keefe, emphasizing the defensive side of things and kind of tamping down expectations for his offensive game, because Saar right now is a already impact defender with his length and his ability to block shots around the rim. You saw him alter a lot of finishes in the game against Atlanta and beforehand. He could switch out to the perimeter, and offensively, it's a work in progress. He's taking a lot of threes. He's not making that many, and his touch around the rim is suspect, but that's stuff that can improve with time, and his defensive game gives him a great floor to work off of.
What about the other two first-rounders? Bob Carrington had 16-6 and 6 last night, and Keshawn George, who was such a preseason star, he poured in 11 in 32 minutes. What's the report on those guys through four games?
Yeah, with Carrington, his pull-up shooting is translating, and one thing I'm going to be interested to see is his pull-up shooting is concentrated in the mid-range a lot now. Obviously, that's an inefficient shot by people in the analytics game. Can he move that back to the three-point line and become a more efficient scorer? And his defense is going to be really good. He's got the length. He's got the size. He's got the mentality, as you saw a little bit when he got that hard foul from Garrison Matthews. This is someone who's not afraid to get in there and really, you know, put his nose in and be a dog defensively. And then you have Keshawn George, who I don't know exactly what he is yet, but like he told us at practice today, he does everything at a good level already. He's a good shooter already. He's a good passer already. He's a good ball handler already. He's a good defender already because of his length and his size. But what the question I have for him is, what of those skills can develop into excellent? And that might really depend. That might really affect his ceiling.
Varun, my last one is, I think of Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma and maybe even Valanciunas to a degree as the better they play, the more enticing they are to teams that aren't Washington, right, who are in different places who could use those guys. Just what's the timeline there? What's the thought process there for two guys that are going to carry the scoring load?
Yeah, so I feel like Kuzma and Poole, they get lumped together with obvious reason because of when they came into the team and the positions as far as being stars. I do want to separate them a little bit just because of their age. You know, Kuzma's 29. I think Valanciunas is 32. Poole's 25 years old, and he's having a great start to the season.
Yep.
It's so early. He's shooting an unreasonably high percentage from three. But moving back to the point guard spot really does seem to have unlocked him. And, you know, the conversations about him playing well might shift from this is someone we can trade to this is someone we can actually have as a part of the future.
Great information. Good hit with us. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, buddy.
Absolutely. Check out Varun's work in the Washington Post as he joins us here on the Beltway Blitz. Good intel on the teams in town you care the most about. There is one professional athlete who is not a Halloween guy. We will tell you who next on Grant and Danny. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. It is Halloween on this Thursday. We'll take you up to 6:30 and keep you company as you get home to pass out candy or get the kids out into the neighborhood dressed up in costume. Should be a very, very fun night in the area for so many of you and your families. Looking at the injury report that just dropped officially. So some notes here for those of you just jumping in the car. Best news for Washington is that Brandon Coleman is out of the concussion protocol and was a full participant at practice. This is relevant because he's going to be their starting left tackle. But it's even more significant because Cornelius Lucas, who splits time with him at left tackle, who's dealing with an ankle injury that saw him leave last week's game and not come back, didn't practice again today. So, Danny, he's 0 for 2 Wednesday, Thursday, has not practiced at all, trending toward inactive. We'll see if he ends up practicing tomorrow and changes that. But right now it looks like Coleman could be in line, not only for his first true start, but legitimately 100% of the timeshare for the first time. They've been doing this kind of 50-50 splitting the job routine. If he plays every down, in and of itself, that's a huge leap up from what he's been asked to do previously. But then you got to go head-to-head on many, many snaps with Brian Burns, who's got a sack in four straight games, who's got a sack in five of six games, who's one of the best pass rushers in the conference at this point. That would be a gigantic challenge for Coleman, who's technically made three starts, but who's never really played in more than half of snaps.
Hasn't exactly played like a starter. It's a unique thing. You don't usually see that left tackle rotation, but this is the only, what's the right word, concern or thing that you got circled here for the Giants, is their ability to wreak havoc up there on that defensive front in terms of pass rush, as good as anybody in the league, with Lawrence and Burns, whom you mentioned, and others. This is one of those kind of puzzle pieces and challenges where you'd like to get some shots. You'd like to be able to go down the football field, but can you make sure you block it up? You're chipping Ben Sinnott or having Ertz not necessarily stay in, but just, you know, a chip on his way out in the route, and you're delaying some timing on certain things. How much are you willing to sacrifice? Because you can't have too much help out from the guard next to him, because that's where Dexter Lawrence roams. And I got to make sure I know where that dude is, and there are four hands on that guy pretty much every play. If I'd like to run something, I'm going to have to knock him around a little bit. There's very few times where I think I'll have a pass play where, you know, only one person's trying to block him singled up. And if it is, it's a screen or something quick. So that's kind of where the chess match is going to come here for Kingsbury and Company, really testing this protection.
What I love, though, is that this is going to be ultra revealing as to where Coleman's at. You know, whether or not they need to spell him a little bit, whether, you know, that's why they're doing it, or maybe then you could just take the kid gloves off, right? You could really take the training wheels off and say, all right, it's your gig. I mean, if he goes out there and plays 64 snaps against Brian Burns and, you know, on 23 dropbacks, let's say he's one-on-one with him and he gets two pressures and doesn't have a sack and he handles his own, then, well, TJ Watt's looming and you know, he plays on both sides of the line, so it could be a different conversation. But, you know, there's certainly one better guy coming up on the schedule, obviously. But for the most part, I would say if you could block Brian Burns and have success in that matchup, you're going to be okay. I mean, this is a guy who's on his way to 11, probably 12 sacks this year.
Again,
who we've seen have a monster season in his career. I mean, how many guys are going to be on the ledger that have a 12-plus sack season like Burns does? And he was even better than that, I think, than those numbers that year in Carolina as part of that defense. But so far, based on what Coleman's been asked to do, it's a gigantic win of a draft pick. Because when they took him where they did in the third round, you just assumed maybe he could eventually be a starting tackle. But it's not going to be this year, and it's certainly not going to be right away. And by the time camp had ended, the rumors were he was going to be pushing for the starting job. If not for an injury, maybe he would have been the guy in week one, and he's kind of been coming back from that slowly here, and they, to the conversation we're having, really have not been aggressive in putting a lot on his plate. But you remember, they didn't sign a tackle, and you and I said mistake. Then they didn't go get one in the first round, and we were upset. They didn't get one in the second round, and it wasn't until pick 67, finally, with Brandon Coleman, that they pounced on a tackle, and it just felt like they're taking a flyer on a guy a lot of people think is a guard. They're playing the lottery. We'll see what happens, but this is probably not the answer. Right now, this moment, he looks like the answer.
He certainly does. And again,
the first time I saw him at training camp, I think I said this to you, Danny. It might have been like after one or two practices. I remember I came back and said, I think that dude can play left tackle. Like, he just swallowed. Now, their DNs in practice obviously weren't great, but he was dominating. I mean, he was really, really good in 11s. And what's changed to make you feel worse?
Yeah, so the story this year, obviously, is Jaden Daniels. And it should be, right? Everybody knows that, et cetera. The football junkie story, or the, like, yeah, you know how, like, with a comedy, with a great movie that's so quotable that everybody quotes the same quotes, right? The ones that you love, kind of like that second or third level type quotes, or little bits of subtlety that are thrown in there that you see that nobody else does. Whatever that is for football is the fact that they might have gotten their left tackle correct with the third round pick in the same draft they got their quarterback right.
How many teams do you think have done? I mean, there's no answer off the top of our head, but how hard is that to do, I guess?
Beyond hard.
Question.
Beyond. It's either, you know.
The same draft?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's basically lightning striking where, like, some sixth rounder turns out to be a stud, or, you know, some converted defensive tackle turns into the guy. I mean, like, it doesn't happen that way. You usually have to use a premium high pick to get that guy. I mean, you look at how first rounds typically go, it's the quarterback, the guy that the quarterback's throwing to, the guy that protects the quarterback, and the guy that hits the quarterback. That's who goes up high. Like, that's how teams find their franchise left tackles. Teams don't go, we think this guy that half the league thinks is a guard is actually our starting left tackle of the future. And if it keeps going on this course, they did that. So strut around and shake the tail when you walk, because that's really damn impressive. But that's really good. And you look at the Giants, this pass rushing group, we mentioned Burns. We've obviously, been discussing Lawrence, but Azeez Ojulari has six sacks. He's second on the team as a pass rusher from the other side. There is no weak link in this pass rush. Like, they want one-on-one matchups, and they'll take their chances with those. This is the significant test. The best way to do it, and this is, like, so cliche, and, you know, 1980s football had on a hat where they preview the two running backs as the premier matchup. The best way to do that is good first down. The best way to do this is not be in obvious pass rushing situations as often as possible. I think you could throw against this team. It's just a matter of, you know, if it's pin your ears back third and eight, I'm not necessarily as excited about that, right? I want good first down production, whether it's the stuff you and I love, quick hits to Eckler, quick hits to running backs, successful run game, making these guys be accountable in that way to slow down some of that upfield stuff.
It's actually kind of crazy how good they are at picking up sacks. Like, I'm not even convinced they're the best pass rushing team in the league, but they have a really high pressure to sack rate, if
they're
that
good.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, when they get near the quarterback, they often get them to the ground. They're number one in the NFL at sack percentage, which is percentage of snaps that end in a sack defensively.
Mm-hmm.
About 15%. You run 100 plays against them, they're going to get 15 sacks, which is nuts. And think about that percentage. That's wild.
Yep.
Like, there are teams, at the Falcons, who cannot rush the quarterback at all. They're dead last. They get sacks on 2% of plays. You run 100 snaps against the Falcons, they're going to sack you twice. The Giants are 15%.
Mm.
And what's really nuts about that is that should mean you're really good.
Yep.
Because
that's usually a great corollary. That's right.
Yeah, that is a drive-killing, that is a turnover-creating metric, that is a, this defense is dominant. If I'm getting sacks at that rate, I mean, come on, other teams up there are teams like the Texans, right? Washington, by the way, do you know they're now defensively top five in sack rate? You believe
top
that?
Top five?
Yeah, they're fifth in sack rate. But I bring that up, too, to say it can be a little bit misleading. Like, do you think that the Commanders' pass rush is great?
No.
Would you go into a game worried about them? Now, there's a big difference between 15.3% and 10.2%, which is the Giants and the Commanders. But that is kind of my point. I think their defense is actually way more pedestrian than people think, because those sacks often come at times where they'll come in bunches or kind of inopportune. It's not at the biggest moments of the game. But I do worry about this week and the Giants for that reason. If you don't have Lucas, Coleman maybe biting off a little more than he can chew here against Burns. You've mentioned Lawrence, who did a really good job with last time. I mean, for a lot of that game, he was not noticeable.
That's right.
Biotis has been great. Allegretti's been very solid. Cosme's obviously Pro Bowl caliber player. Like the interior's been a strength. You don't have to deal with Thibodeau, who's on injured reserve, luckily. But overall, I'd say I'm worried about that. That's definitely a concern.
That's my point of concern. So here comes the announcer's jinx, so to speak. But they haven't had, and this is the type of thing that can change games and how you get one of those closer than it should be NFC East games. They haven't had that devastating sack, fumble, return for a touchdown thing that happens to teams, especially when, you know, you're sacking the quarterback at that rate. They got 35 sacks to the point this season. The next closest team is Denver, I think, that are 14 or 15 behind that. So it's entirely possible that, you know, the fumble that's broken right for them, instead of Nick Allegretti recovering it and they beat Cincinnati, you don't get it. And it goes the other way. I mean, that sort of thing hasn't really happened to them. And it does because it's football.
By the way, how is this possible? I'm just looking this up now while you're saying that. They have picked off one pass this season.
What a bizarre statistical outlier this all is.
How can you possibly lead the NFL in sacks? And by the way, not close. Like, you're the best at getting sacks. And you've intercepted one pass. Wouldn't you think that those two things go hand in hand generally?
Of course you would. Yes, the amount of pressure creates chaos and turnovers and, you know, sack fumbles and, you know, quick throws and all those things, and it's just not happening. It's weird.
Yeah, so the number two team in the NFL, here we go, in sacks is the Broncos, and they have 7 interceptions, just as an example.
Mm-hmm.
7 times as many as the Giants. Yeah. The Giants only have 6 fumble recoveries this year, oh, by the way. I mean, they're down near the bottom of the league with 7 takeaways, which has certainly not been a strength for Washington either. They're tied with the Giants in like the 23-24 range with 7 takeaways in a league where there's teams like Green Bay that has 19 and the Steelers have 15. But you're right. They have not really turned it into the big plays. I'm getting a tweet from someone here, at Grant H. Paulson for me. Danny's at Funny Danny, saying they're worried about Frankie Luvu. So Luvu on the injury report again today did not play with his shin that he's dealing with. This has been a few weeks of this, though, where I guess it's possible if he doesn't practice tomorrow, we can reassess and have a conversation. We'll be out at the Craft House for our Friday field trip, Fairfax Corner. Come on by and watch the show from 2 to 6:30. But this is kind of becoming the norm with Luvu and some of these other veterans. It does not seem like Dan Quinn is pushing anybody to practice, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of saying, hey, if you're banged up, if you're in a place where you don't feel completely right, no problem. Do you. Let us know. We're going to get you some treatment. We'll get you out for a limited workout by the end of the week, and you can be full go for game day. That's just kind of been the trend. Cleveland Farrell went from limited to not practicing today. That would worry me more when you see a guy go in the wrong direction than just back-to-back days that he didn't practice at all. Now, they're not listing it as rest like they have at points. It is a shin. But, yeah, that would be a big loss if he can't go.
It'd be significant, yeah, because these are his feast games, you know. Like, in other games, he's solid playing against good opponents. You need him because he's, you know, arrives with so much violence, to borrow from their phraseology, and is obviously a good player. But these are the kinds of games where he gets his sacks, right? Think of Arizona. You think of Cleveland. You know, offenses that really, really struggle. And the Giants are desperate to let Daniel Jones get hit. Like, they can't wait for it. They look forward to it all week long. Please oblige them. And Luvu's the best candidate to do that, quite frankly, with the way he blitzes.
G&D on the Fan. At the top of the hour, a smart gentleman from the Sumer Sports staff has put together analysis on what various players who might be available in the trade market would be worth, and some of the options Washington could be hunting in the trade market, what it might cost. We're going to talk about that coming up at 5 o'clock on the Fan. But next, I do want you to hear the audio of the sports star who is anti-Halloween, and he explains why he doesn't like Halloween. You'll hear that next. In 13 minutes, I think you guys are going to like the conversation we'll have. Sumer Sports did a piece on trade values of some of the available players. Washington could be a buyer. We've got some thoughts and some questions for one of the folks over at Sumer Sports who's going to join us. So make sure you're listening right at 5 o'clock at the top of the hour here on Grant and Danny. We're Halloween guys. We've made that very clear today. We told you what candies we want, what candies we don't want. Not everybody's a Halloween guy, though, Danny. Did you know that?
Well, I mean, there are a couple people that maybe have a phobia or something weird happened or there's like some sort of weird deal with them. But, like, everyone's a Halloween guy, right?
I think Joe Burrow's going to turn his lights off in the neighborhood tonight. I think you got to walk right by old Joe Burrow's house. This is what's a Grinch for Halloween?
I was going to say, we need a name for that.
Yeah. He is the guy that turns his lights off. That's what I know it as. This is what he had to say about Halloween at the podium this week.
You big Halloween guy or no?
No.
Why not?
I'm not into celebrating something just to celebrate it. But, like, what exactly? I don't know exactly what we're celebrating there. Just, like, dress up to dress up. I don't know.
So you're not a big dress-up guy? You would
I'm not a big dress-up guy. I've always been, like, anti-dress code, like, if somebody tells me I got to wear something, I don't want to wear that. That's just always how I've been. I don't know. I guess I'm a contrarian sometimes.
Well, there'll probably be many kids dressed up as you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. They're dressed up as me. Not a Halloween guy. Doesn't want to dress up. He is the guy that bleached his hair blonde.
Yeah.
At the start of the season. I thought that was as part of maybe some costume, but I guess he just thought it looked cool or wanted to do it for fun. I don't know. But apparently, doesn't want to dress up, doesn't think there's anything to celebrate, not going to be part of Halloween.
Fascinating. Fascinating. I mean, that takes extra effort. I mean, as somebody that I can personally say dislikes and even actively avoids certain things that have kind of crept into popular culture or kind of part of our normal parlance or whatever, and I go,
That's a funny way to say hates fun things.
Yeah, like, I always take issue with when I see something that's not fun, but people are doing it anyhow, I go, nope, it sucks. We should always point out when something sucks. Halloween is not. Halloween is great. Like, the pure joy from kids and adults and everybody alike, like, there's roots going back hundreds and hundreds of years on this thing. This is not like some new TikTok dance that if you're like, yeah, I'm out on that, totally fine. Like, you're not doing some, like, whatever the latest trend is to some song that stinks. Totally fine, Joe. I'll co-sign that with you. We're on it. You know, like the wave at stadiums? Fine. Co-sign with you. Halloween? I mean, again, you're going back a long, long time with this bad boy, right? Where we've got some old school roots as societies have evolved and changed and people left the countries where they lived and moved to new places. We brought Halloween with us, man. All Hallows Eve is a thing. Get on board.
I just think if you're a football player, in Joe Burrow's case, you got a bunch of kids dressing up as you. You got to do it up big at your house. You mm-hmm. know, a lot of these guys, like, people know where they are, but they leave them alone. You know what I'm saying? But you're part of the neighborhood. So if you're in a spot where people are coming over, I would hope that you're giving out an awesome candy bar. You're doing something fun. You're doing it big, shelling out some of that salary on some candy for the kids. This makes me think that my guy, one of my favorite quarterbacks, guy I love, and Joey B, he's turning the lights off, and he's going to bed tonight.
That's going to be the new thing. That you know how they always come up with the weird questions at the combine? You know where it's like, what were you asked? This has got to go on there now. Do you have this weird attitude towards Halloween? Are you going to not be part of your community and shut the lights off?
I would ask a player that. Because here's what it tells you.
You can't be a leader.
It tells you, are you part of something bigger than yourself? Can you have fun and just be one of the guys? Can you just be one of the guys in the neighborhood? Are you going to look out for the youth of tomorrow? Are you a role model? Are you a leader? You got to show the young people. I give out king-size candy bars today because the Van Alstynes did yesterday. You understand?
Of course I do.
They were the beacon on the hill. They were that house at the cul-de-sac that you said, one day I'm going to make it, you know? I'm going to be a Van Alstyne. I'm going to give out a king-size candy bar in the cul-de-sac. Now, I'm not a cul-de-sac. I'm barely out of a townhouse.
You're working on it. You're working
your
way.
But giving out some king-size damn candy bars while
you got to start somewhere. I mean, I had similar conversations. The Durkins always gave out the king-size candy bars. The Kites always did. You know, some neighbors moved in and out. Some folks were bite-sized, and that was always their thing. And, you know, God bless you. Appreciate the smile. Happy Halloween, et cetera. And, you know, the one family always did apples, didn't believe in the candy.
Horrible bit.
I said never. In my mind, I go, never. I will never want to be that house. Nice people, but they didn't believe in candy.
That never happened in my lifetime that I actually got an apple. Mm-hmm. I always heard about it. It's in movies. It's in, you know, it's like the cliche shtick, like the dentist gives out the apple.
Yeah. So they
I didn't never saw anyone do that ever.
I forget their names. They were very, honestly, very kind people, all 99% of the time. Their whole deal was, like, we don't think this is a great thing to promote for kids. And then they use words, and I just tuned out. My eyes rolled back in my head. Just bored. But they did that. They did the apple bit. It wasn't like they turn off their lights, because the people that are worse are the light turner offers. Don't even leave a bowl. You don't participate at all. They're answering the door. What are you dressed up as? How this is? I've never heard of that. What's this costume? They're engaging, and then they drop the apple in, and it was a.
So we have a couple buddies of ours, young people like us that live in the neighborhood with young kids, and we kick it with them from time to time. Our house, their house, whatever. We'll get together, do fires, drink, have a good time. And last year, for no reason, last several years we've gone by, you know, they're doing the drinks for the adults and they're Halloween people, marking out, right? Last year we go over to their house, lights off, knocking on the door for 10 minutes, nothing. I call the guy, I'm like, dude, what's going on? Where are you guys? Oh, we're not doing it this year. I was like, whoa, what do you mean you're not doing it this year? That's not what this is. It's not a year-to-year opt-in. Like, it's Halloween. Come on down here and give my kids some candy. Or I'm going to start kicking your car. Like, what are you doing? They just opted out. So I still give them crap for that. Last night I go, you guys doing Halloween this year? Of course. Why wouldn't we do Halloween?
I don't know why you wouldn't. Yeah, you tell
me. It's like a Christmas with the Cranks bit, man. All of a sudden you just wouldn't put Frosty out. Like, nobody knows why.
Can you tell me where you were on the evening of October 31st, 2023? Yeah, why? You weren't doing Halloween. You know what I mean? Like, you've been suspected.
Just lights off. The other thing that's funny is, the opposite of that. I've got one guy in my neighborhood who goes, like, whatever you think is hard, harder. I drove by coming back from picking my kids up from school today, and he now has tents set up in his driveway that you're clearly – now, my kids will not do this. I'm going to do it because I'm kind of sized. But not a long driveway, by the way. Probably 15 feet long, whatever, just long enough for, like, a truck and maybe a couple feet on either side. But – he's got like two tents set up going into his garage, so everything's indoor. And I'm assuming it's going to be like a haunted house, just right there.
Oh, yeah.
But every year, this guy's got the works. The yard is like gravestones lit up and stuff. But he's upped his game to what appears to be some type of a haunted house. And it's just like his Super Bowl. Halloween is as good as it gets for him.
My sister-in-law is like that, where it is. It's not a joke. It's her favorite day.
I love it.
Oh, she likes it. No. I like it. You like it. She loves it. Like, loves it. The Halloween budget is more than you would think every single year. Because it's like, whatever last year was has to be topped and topped and topped. Her costumes are always a 10. Like, I don't know how good, like, she's pretty good arts and crafts, but it's like next level cosplay type stuff in terms of the costume. Like, it's always perfect. Their daughter, perfect. Husband is like, sure, I'll play too. He gets a perfect costume. Their decorations, like the whole, like, I don't know where they keep all this stuff. I don't know if they have like a special storage facility that's not at their homestead, where they put all this. It's unbelievable. And I love that because, yeah, it's for you and you get excited about it, but that's the house on the block that everyone talks about. Now you're the most popular house, right? Wherever, have you been by that one down there? Because there's a haunted house. I love that for your pal. I love it.
So annually, on Thanksgiving, I send out my request on Twitter to get a picture of everybody's Thanksgiving plate. I like to see those. I just sent my annual Halloween tweet out.
Okay.
For you guys to all send me a picture of the candy that you are passing out today, and I will respond to every tweet I get, every picture with a grade 1 to 10 to grade the candy that you are passing out. So you can go submit those throughout the evening at Grant H. Paulson if you'd like a grade back. I thought about giving out my grades as random players in Washington football history that correlated to your candy. It's like if it was really, really good, you know, you might get like Art Monk, and if it was really, really bad, then you get like Trunk Candidate or something.
Like, if it's a great one, it's Jesse Armstead.
I thought it was like, a little bit too deep of a cut, and I didn't want anybody getting bothered.
You know what I
think? So we'll just do a 1 to 10 grade. Go ahead and send those over at Grant H. Paulson. Next, let's talk trade deadline with the good folks at Sumer Sports, who have been evaluating who's going to be available right here on The Fan.